This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Earlier this week, the United Nations Atomic Agency said that Iran carried out its threat to enrich uranium at its underground Fordow nuclear site, confirming Tehran's most serious step yet away from the 2015 nuclear deal.
And Iran also has taken a series of steps since July to step away from the nuclear deal, which is a set of calibrated responses to harsh U.S. sanctions. And this is designed actually to pressure Europe into helping Tehran economically.
And also persuade the White House that its maximum pressure sanctions and policy is leading Iran back to the brim of being a breakout nuclear power, something that President Trump said he won't accept.
So the resumption of uranium enrichment at Fordow, which Iran announced last week, is the most dramatic step so far. While the International Atomic Energy Agency has said that Iran is for now only feeding a few hundred basic centrifuges with the material, the site is heavily fortified in an underground location and is considered impregnable by most conventional weapons. So for more on this morning we speak to Professor James Dorsey, a senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute in Singapore. Thank you for joining us, James. Now, what do you make of Iran's assertion that this nuclear enrichment is for peaceful purposes? How likely is it, in your view, that Iran is actually doing this for its own domestic economic benefit?
Well, I think what Iran is doing is really a response to the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear accord and the maximum pressure campaign that the U.S. has been waging. The Iranians essentially had two choices. They could have taken the moral high ground and basically adhered to the nuclear agreement despite the U.S. sanctions and the U.S. withdrawal. That would have been, in many ways, what the international community would have wanted. The problem with it is that, one, it may have been difficult to sell at home domestically, and it doesn't put pressure on not only Europe, but also Russia and China to ensure that the that Iranian adherence to the nuclear accord remains viable. So what the Iranians have done instead is gradually withdraw from the agreement, raising the stakes for the international community. And the message is not just to the Europeans. And in many ways, I think that the Iranians would be smarter to address it to Russia and China. What it is about for the Iranians is that they are somehow helped in alleviating the impact of the crippling Iranian U.S. sanctions. The Europeans are limited in what they can do because it's a free market economy, and European companies have no obligation to adhere to European policy. That's very different in China and Russia, where the economies are dominated by state-owned companies and therefore can be directed.
And also, what is going to be U.S. Renewed response to this, if any? Because if it is indeed true that the Iranians are enriching, this seems like quite a dangerous situation.
Well, that's exactly, I think, the point to which the Iranians want to bring the situation. In other words, what they want is a situation in which the international community is seriously worried that they may be developing a military nuclear capability, or in any case, being close to a breakthrough point to be able to do so, and that fear is what will drive forcing the United States to return to the negotiating table. The problem with it is it's a very risky strategy. And despite the fact that Trump has on a number of occasions said that he would be happy to meet with the Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, this could very well end up in a military confrontation, or at least a military strike that nobody really wants.
So is there any way to turn back from this? I mean, what would need to happen for the previous status quo to be actually restored?
I think you're going to need some sort of face-saving formula. So with other words, Trump cannot be seen to be backing down on his policy. But on the other hand, Iran cannot be seen to be caving into U.S. demands. Now, one way that the United States could achieve that is by granting waivers to certain countries that would allow them a quota of Iranian energy, oil and gas imports, which would help the Iranians somehow compensate for the economic pain that they're suffering. Another way of maybe approaching this is that if indeed, and it's a big if, but nonetheless there are certain signs, that if indeed you get a reduction of tension in the Gulf itself, particularly between Saudi Arabia and Iran, that could create openings for some form of indirect negotiation initially.
And James, on that note, we'd also like to take a look at Saudi Arabia. Since the U.S. has accused them of using Twitter to spy on their own people, and this is against the backdrop of the Aramco IPO, the WSJ has highlighted a shrinking space for criticism in Saudi Arabia under Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, a problem which hasn't actually cropped up overnight. So perhaps you could give us a bit of insight here. What has actually brought us to this point?
Well, I think there are two separate issues here. One is that a degree of social liberalization and a program that has yet to prove itself for economic diversification in Saudi Arabia that was launched by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman does not involve any form of political liberalization. On the contrary, we've seen a brutal crackdown, whether it's the arrest of women activists and other activists and prominent Saudis who've been really very mild in some cases of their criticism, ranging to the killing last year of Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And that obviously has not contributed to Saudi Arabia's reputation. But then again, we live in a world in which human rights and freedom of expression rights are not at the top of the agenda of most world leaders, including President Trump. I think the issue with the IPO is that this is just one, the human rights situation is just one more issue that is, if you wish, tainting Saudi Arabia's image. The real problem with the IPO is, I think, for foreign investors, and that's what they have to consider. And to be fair, Aramco did highlight this in its prospectus, which is obviously this is a very tense part of the world. The September attacks on Aramco facilities show that these facilities are vulnerable. It's not clear that whatever one invests in an IPO is money that's going to go to the benefit of Aramco itself rather than the state sovereign wealth fund that is managed by Mohammed bin Salman and used for other purposes rather than Aramco. And of course, Aramco has a long history of not only being the source of revenue for the Saudi government, but also being used for all kinds of projects, government projects, that are not core to Aramco's business.
Thank you very much, James. And that was Professor James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. On what's been happening over in Iran as well as Saudi Arabia. But right now we are heading into a few messages, and then after that we'll be back to take a look at more local news for you. So be sure to stay tuned for that here on The Morning Run at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.